I'm Tommy Gimler. Shit got real in Baltimore this week as rioting and looting forced the postponement of two Orioles-White Sox games and forced the third game of the series to be played in front of zero fans inside Oriole Park at Camden Yards. We'll talk about that and more coming up on the Daily Upper Decker. Actually, I'll talk about that and more coming up on the Daily Upper Decker because I'm the only one here.
The Daily Upper Decker, nothing but sports and crap.
All right, I'm Tommy Gimler coming to you live from Chicago. I'm in town working the NFL draft this week, which is basically the biggest crapshoot in organized sports. Although now that I said that with what's going down in the city of syphilis and drug trafficking this week, it's probably not as big of a crapshoot as going to work and then not knowing whether or not you're going to come home and still have a TV in your living room. And that's where we're going to start for today's hot mess.
The hot mess.
So who do you think is more upset about the rioting and looting going down in Baltimore and basically shutting down Major League Baseball in that city right now? Fantasy geeks who own both Jose Abreu and Adam Jones, or White Sox fans who somehow managed to get out of prison for a couple of weeks and decided to make the trip to Baltimore to watch their beloved team take a shot at taking down the Orioles? I would say that the answer there is the guy who, you know, whose Subaru got burned out in the street for no fucking reason. I think he would be more pissed than them. But otherwise, I think it's a toss-up. White Sox fans, the few that were able to get out of the clink and make it to Baltimore for the series, and fantasy geeks who have those players. Because that's a big fucking deal for fantasy dorks. You know, especially if you're in a weekly league. You know, you start Jose Abreu, you start Manny Machado, you start Adam Jones, and then, you don't play two games, and then the third one is in front of no one, then, you know, who's really trying then at that point? I mean, what's the fun in that, playing in front of nobody? That's right, rioting and looting in Baltimore, and people seem to be so shocked by what's going down. Not this guy right here. The city of syphilis, the city of drug trafficking. Baltimore, also known as the seventh most dangerous city in the United States, according to Forbes, with a population of 626,848. The violent crime rate is 1,417 per 100,000 residents. It says that Baltimore's violent crime rate fell about 5% last year, but the Atlantic Coast city is still plagued with drugs and poverty and ranks in the top 15 U.S. cities for all violent crimes but forcible rape. Which, is there any other kind? We're going to have to get Rakish on that. Forcible rape, isn't that just redundant? What kind of rape isn't forcible? Oops, I tripped on a step, and wouldn't you know it, my erection, it was weird that I had an erection at the time, but it just fell into my cousin's ass as I tripped up the step. So forcible rape, we'll get on there on that and see if there's any other kind of rape but forcible. But really, is it that shocking? I mean, at that point, then you're saying, so maybe there are six other cities that it would have been less shocking if it would have taken place in than Baltimore. But anyway, the rioting and the looting got so bad that Major League Baseball decided to postpone the first two games of the Orioles and White Sox series, and then decided for the first time in the history of Major League Baseball to play a game in front of zero fans. That's a big deal, kids. That's a big deal. This isn't an inner city high school basketball game in New York City. This isn't a WNBA game. This is a Major League Baseball game in a big league ballpark, and it is being played in front of zero fans because of what Major League Baseball deems safety concerns. And that's a big deal. And what these people, this is the crazy thing about all of the rioting and looting that's going on in the city of Baltimore, is this is just the way that hundreds, if not thousands, of idiots have deemed their response to a wrongful death at the hands of the city's police force, and they're just using it as a reason to crash into a CVS and gank a bunch of rubbers and Sudafed and then try and burn the building to the ground. That is their response to a wrongful death. And I'm not saying that there's really like a right way to protest. You know, this is definitely not the way that you want to take care of business. But this is what they don't think about these cocksuckers as they're doing this. This is what they don't have in the back of their minds. It's just they don't think shit like this through, is that there are a lot of people who count on the Orioles for work. All right? So this was a three-game series. Two games didn't get played at all. One game got played, but no one was there. So let's say you're selling foam fingers, frozen lemonade, cotton candy, churros. Do they sell churros in Baltimore? They have to. They sell churros everywhere. So let's say you're selling churros. This is a big week for you. There are six games this week. That's going to be a hell of a paycheck. And odds are, I'm not saying everybody, but odds are that if you're selling churros at a baseball game, at a baseball park or, you know, a stadium, odds are every cent of that paycheck matters. Very few people are saying, you know what? I need a little bit of extra cash, so I'm going to walk up and down the stairs, and I'm going to sell fried bread or whatever the hell a churro is, like, you know, cinnamon spice fried shitty bread, right? So most of the people, like, this is their job, and that's all they have. So this is a big week for them, right? They're going to have a nice paycheck. But now three games have been taken away. And it's not just those three games that have been taken out of that paycheck, as the Orioles have now decided that their series that they were supposed to have at Camden Yards this week against the Tampa Bay Rays, Major League Baseball and the Orioles agreed to move that series down the Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg because it's going to be safer there for them to do that. So now all of these vendors who are working at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, that's three more games that they're going to miss out on, and that means they're not going to work again until May 11th when the Orioles host the Blue Jays. And that's if the people their city can get their shit together by then. May 11th, that's the next time they're going to work. So that's the thing that these morons don't take into consideration, is that, hey, maybe some of our own, you know, maybe we're hurting some of our own here. Like, what about the people who work at that CVS? Now what are they going to do for a job? Although for the Baltimore Orioles franchise, maybe this is what they needed to get things turned around here in 2015, because they've been playing some bad baseballs of late. They went up to Toronto and just got curb stomped, and it wasn't much prettier when Boston came to town either. So maybe this is what they needed to turn their season around, because I'll tell you what, they took care of business today against the White Sox in an empty stadium in front of zero fans. So the good news for them is that their next three games are down in Tropicana Field. And that's pretty much going to be an empty stadium too. So they've got that going for them, which is nice.
The hot mess.
Of course, the other thing to come out of the city of incurable gonorrhea this week as a result of the rioting and looting was a motivational speech, or at least an attempt at one, from former Baltimore Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis. Here's what Ray had to say to the kids out on the streets, ripping shit up.
No way. No way. No way this can happen in our city. No. Young kids, you got to understand something. Get off the streets. Violence is not the answer. Violence has never been the answer.
All right, let's stop right there. Ray Lewis, violence is not the answer. Violence has never been the answer. Actually, that's an incorrect statement coming from a man like Ray Lewis, as violence was indeed the answer on July 31st, 2000, outside an Atlanta nightclub, when Lewis and two of his boys stabbed two other guys to death during an argument and then fled in Lewis's limo. So that's a false statement. Right away, you know, if I'm a kid in Baltimore, I'm like, no, I'm running back onto the streets. You're confusing me here. Violence, it was the answer for you, but it's not the answer for me. Here's what else he had to say.
Freddie Gray, we don't do nothing for him doing this. We know there's a deeper issue. We know what the jungle looks like. But this isn't it. It's enough of us in the streets trying to change what's going on. Baltimore, get off the streets. Kids, go home. Stay home.
All right. So, kids, Baltimore, get off the streets. Kids, go home. Stay home. But if I'm a kid, it's a confusing speech here from Ray. Very confusing speech. Which is it? The NFL Play 60 program is telling me, go outside. Play in the streets. And now Ray Lewis is telling me, go home. Stay home. It's very confusing. It's almost as confusing as the Kelly Clarkson. I mean, which is it, honey, fat or skinny? Pick one and go with it. Here's what else he had to say.
You don't have no right to do what you're doing to this city. Too many hardworking people built this city. We put this city together. We put this city on our back.
All right. So, again, let's just remind everyone that Ray Lewis was a football player. Now, somewhere in the history of this great country, some people, not literally, unless they were Paul Bunyan, but not literally, but some people have put an entire city on their back and gotten them out of tough times. Ray Lewis, you're a football player. You are not one of them.
We with you. We know what's going on. We know the problems. We know there was wrong done. We know we're not getting the right justice. We know all these answers. But riding in our streets is wrong. It's dead wrong. We got to go back to the beginning. It takes a village.
All right, so let's stop him right there. We got to go back to the beginning. Maybe Ray Lewis is in the minority here on this one. Maybe he did not see Amistad. You want to go back to the beginning? What is the beginning? The 1800s? Did you see Amistad? Believe me, if there's any place you want to be, if you think 2015 is a bad time to be a black man in America, watch that movie. And then you will agree with me that the beginning is not where the African-American population of Baltimore wants to be.
It takes a whole village to raise one child. We got to redefine what this looks like.
All right, let's stop right there. It takes a whole village to raise one child. I'm going to go ahead and disagree with them and just say two good parents.
We got to redefine what building Baltimore looks like. Because there's too many people putting real sweat, real tears to make our city a better place. I can't come back home and this is it. Can't walk the street. This is our future. Our future's in Baltimore. What we're trying to build is in Baltimore. Too many babies paying attention to this craziness. And the sad part is we got young kids trying to tell us how they're going to dictate our city. That won't happen. We must change this right now. Stop the violence, man.
That was actually pretty good. So he got me there. You know, Jerry Maguire, Renee Zellweger, Tom Cruise had her at hello. Not so in this speech right here. You had me nowhere. You had me go nowhere there for the first half. But actually, that second half of that speech, that's pretty solid.
The hot mess.
The 2015 NFL draft is here in Chicago, begins Thursday night. And I got to be honest with you guys, I don't get what the big hoopla is about. I do and I don't. Personally, I think that the NFL draft is the biggest crapshoot in all of sports. It's like trying to date Roseanne Barr. Are you going to get the fat, funny one? Or are you going to get the fat one that wants to like poke your eyes out with a fucking carving knife, right? I mean, either way, I suppose you know you're going to get somebody fat. But, you know, I want the fat, funny one. If I'm going to go in that, if I'm going to let that thing sit on my face, I want it to be funny. I don't want it to sit on my face and then as like, you know, I'm, you know, borderline unconscious, I got to worry about a fucking knife coming into my eye, right? It's a crapshoot, the NFL draft, big time crapshoot. So I don't get all the hoopla that's around it. Like so many times you hear someone say, we drafted Ryan Leaf, we drafted Jameis Winston, you know, whatever. Anytime you say that, it's like, now we're going to be a good team. You know, the odds of that happening for every Peyton Manning that you find, there's just 20 to 25 Ryan Leafs. They're just, you can't just based on what a kid did in college say that he's going to be that same player at the next level. And what I do get about the draft and why everyone is so excited about it is because it's just like being a Marlins fan at the beginning of the season in baseball or like a Brewers fan. There's hope. You know, everybody's 0-0 right now. You get a couple of good players who were great in college and you were a shitty team last year. You know, there's hope that maybe we can turn this thing around in just a matter of a couple of years and be somebody. All it takes is a couple of good draft picks sometimes. Look at the Seahawks, you know, couple years of great draft picks. You find Russell Wilson in the third round. You draft a great defense and all of a sudden you're a perennial Super Bowl contender. So I get it. There's a lot of hope, and I think that that's what makes the draft so appealing to the people who love it. It's just that there's so much hope, so much optimism attached to it. But at the same time, I want to go back to what I said in that it's an absolute crapshoot. I want to go back to when the Packers drafted Brian Brohm in the 2008 NFL draft. And these ass clowns at ESPN, one was Merrill Hodge and the other one was a young Todd McShay. And every year here on the Dud, we rip apart Mel Kiper Jr. on how terrible he is. You have one thing. You get paid six figures at the four letter to be good at one thing. And that is telling me who's going to be drafted by what team and when it's going to happen. If there's any trades that are going down, Mel Kiper, if you're getting paid that much, you should know what is going on. If you're getting paid six figures and I'm watching ESPN, I want your head so far up Ted Thompson's asshole that you know what kind of Captain Crunch he ate 2 days earlier. That's what I want out of an NFL draft analyst. That is what I want. I don't want these picks that you're telling me that he's the best player available because you're friends with the agent. You know, I don't want these guesses. You know what? I can guess. You know, my grandma can sit home and guess as she smokes her pack of Newports in an hour. She can sit home and guess at who the Patriots are going to take with the 32nd pick in the 2015 NFL draft. She can guess. I don't want guessing. I want the facts. I want to know what trades are going to happen. I don't want rumors. I want what pick is going down when, which team is taking them, who's the best quarterback left. I don't want guesses. And instead, most of the time, this is what we get. Listen to what Merrill Hodge and Todd McShay had to say about Brian Brohm when the Packers selected him in the 2008 NFL draft.
Yeah, Brohm, Rodgers, both of the opportunity long-term to be the Packers quarterback.
Actually, I do like Brohm better than Aaron Rodgers, where Aaron Rodgers is right now in his career. Let's look at the positives with Brohm. You know, as Reese just mentioned, he's played in two pro-style systems. That's a plus when you come to the NFL. I thought he was more mobile as far as moving in the pocket and getting out of the pocket. I feel a lot of times he was running for his life, too. And the thing that concerned me the very most is the inconsistency with the accuracy. That just really bothers me because I've really never seen a college quarterback that's inconsistent with that come to the NFL and translate and start being consistent. That is my only really concern when you think about the transition aspect, because that can hurt you in the NFL. I mean, those errant passes go the other way. The NFL, they don't just get a completion, they just go the other way.
I think he has very good touch, though. He has good timing. He gets rid of the ball on time. And when he gets into a rhythm, he can beat you in a lot of different ways. I like him. I honestly think Brian Brohm, 2 years from now, could be the starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. It would not shock me at all. And I still think Aaron Rodgers has a chance as well. But I think Brian Brohm's upside is greater than that of Aaron Rodgers. I look at him. The size is solid. He has a background that's solid, and I think mentally he has what it takes to get it done at the next
time. How did your evaluations compare? Aaron Rodgers coming out of college, Brian Brohm coming out of college.
They're surprisingly similar. I mean, I look at Brian Brohm. I have him 27th overall, and then Aaron Rodgers I had early second round range. So not that far off. I rated Brohm a little bit better coming out of school. I thought Rodgers, no creativity coming out of school. Questions about, obviously, the Jeff Tedford system. And similar with Brohm. How does he perform when the initial play breaks down? And that's something I'll be interested to see between both of them.
Just like when Aaron Rodgers was coming out, the one thing that he lacked was any anticipation. He had to see a route come open, right. See a wide receiver come open, and that is just disturbing if you're thinking about transitioning. Brohm does not do that. He will throw off anticipation. That is a huge advantage going to the next level.
So there you have it. You know, that's disturbing, isn't it, Merrill Hodge? Disturbing. One is the 2014 NFL MVP, but the other, I don't know what he's doing. He's probably selling tires somewhere in Tennessee or somewhere. Brian Brohm, hey, come on down to Brian Brohm, you Chevrolets. You know, we'll put you in a winner. We'll put you in. Every Chevy Cruze we have on the lot has less than 36,000 miles on it. Come on down to Brian Brohm Chevy, and we'll put you in, a Chevy Cavalier. Do they still make Cavaliers? I don't even know.
The hot mess.
So, you know, with the NFL draft, like look at guys like Deion Jordan, right? Deion Jordan was selected third overall by the Miami Dolphins just a couple of years ago. Now he's suspended again, and this time it's going to cost him an entire year in Miami. And I'm pretty sure that when the Carolina Panthers selected Greg Hardy in the NFL draft, there was no scouting report from Mel Kiper or Todd McShay that said, hey man, you got to watch out. There's warning signs. Greg Hardy's one of those guys who eventually is going to beat the shit out of his girlfriend and hold a couple of machine guns up against her head and then get convicted, but then win his appeal because he pays off the victim. I'm pretty sure that that was not in the draft report. But what is known about Greg Hardy now is that he's a woman beater. And you know what Greg Hardy does not like? Is his new Dallas Cowboys teammates calling him a woman beater. So according to Pro Football Talk, the Dallas Cowboys' newly acquired defensive end slash woman beater, Greg Hardy, got involved in an altercation with a teammate at conditioning workouts last week after that teammate called him a woman beater. Woman beater Greg Hardy allegedly questioned Devon Coleman's effort during Friday morning's conditioning work, and Coleman responded by calling Hardy a woman beater. Hardy didn't care for it, and the two took turns yelling unpleasantries at each other. So this is my advice for Greg Hardy is, if you think this is bad, if you think Devon Coleman, who is, you know, probably best recognized from the phrase, who the fuck is Devon Coleman? If you think it's bad that he's calling you a woman beater at conditioning workouts, well, wait until you get onto the field and you have to deal with guys who aren't on your team. Like, and this is it, man. When you beat a woman, and this is something you should have thought about before you beat a woman. When you beat a woman, you're going to be known as a woman beater the rest of your life. Like, look at Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods didn't even beat a woman. He got beat by a woman. And that's still what people talk about to this day. It's like, do you remember 5 years ago when he got his ass kicked by a woman? So now imagine being the guy who actually beats a woman. You are going to be known as a woman beater for the rest of your days. It's like you're a kid fucker. You can't just go 18 months without violating a kid and think, well, good thing I'm no longer going to be known as a petter ass. Like, that shit is for life. You walk into church, people are going to point and say, hey, there's that guy who fucks kids. You walk into a come and go and buy some scratchers, and you happen to win $250 on one of those scratchers, people aren't going to say, hey, there goes the guy who won $250 on a scratcher. They're going to go home and they're going to say, hey, that guy who fucks kids, yeah, he just won $250 on a scratcher. That is unfucking believable. And it's going to be the same thing with Greg Hardy now, no matter where you go for the rest of your life. You're not going to be known as that, like, that defensive end who is just ruthless when it comes to getting to the quarterback. You're going to be known as an all-pro defensive end, maybe, but it's always going to be he's an all-pro defensive end who beat the snot out of a woman and got away with it because he had a shit ton of money.
The Hot Mess.
Here's a shtick that's getting a little older than Betty White's dried up poon. Stephen A. Smith had the balls to go on his SiriusXM radio show and again refer to somebody as a racist when nothing could be further from the truth. This time around, and again, this is literally 6 weeks since he accused Chip Kelly of being a racist for keeping Riley Cooper and letting guys like DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin and LeSean McCoy walk while keeping Riley Cooper on the roster. That was his evidence that Chip Kelly was a racist. And just like this time, he basically, without saying the words, Tom Brady is a racist, basically insinuates that Tom Brady is a racist because he did not go to the White House celebrations for the New England Patriots because Barack Obama was in the White House. He cited that when George Bush was in the White House, he went all three times. But this time around, Barack Obama's in the White House. He didn't go. Apparently, that's his A plus B equals C. He didn't go when a black president was in the office. Therefore, Tom Brady is racist. And then, just like he did the time before, he then went on other radio shows. He went on First Take the next day. That is utterly ridiculous. I said nothing of the sort. Tom Brady is a good man. Tom Brady is not. If bloggers are gonna say this and they're just looking for headlines, and that's what they're gonna do. It's utterly ridiculous. You're gonna have bloggers and folks in the media that react to bloggers and then try to use headlines to make it a story. I never, ever, ever said that, nor would I have called Tom Brady a racist. That is utterly ridiculous. Stephen A. Smith. It's getting old. How this guy is still on the air, I have no idea. Never a suspension for shit like this. Never. Turn the tables and see what happens. Let's see what happens when Howard Stern goes on a rant and calls Vince Wilfork a racist for not going to the White House to celebrate the New England Patriots Super Bowl victory. Let's see what happens when Vince Wilfork is accused of being a racist for not going. And with Stephen A. Smith, for whatever reason, it's just this shitty world of journalism that we're living in now. Like, Stephen A. Smith is considered a journalist, and all he does is bitch about things that aren't even true. And he does it so if he says something on First Take, Chip Kelly, you tell me, there's a lot of brothers who are going to be upset about this. Riley Cooper on the Eagles. Where's DeSean Jackson? Where is Jeremy Maclin? Where is LeSean McCoy? They're not on the Eagles. Chip Kelly is a racist. That's Stephen A. Smith. And he says it because it gets people outraged. And they go nuts on Twitter. And they go nuts on Facebook. And if people, I'm sure a lot of white people are still using MySpace. And, you know, they're jumping on MySpace and doing something with it there. I don't know what you do on MySpace anymore. All I know is that it's still around. But that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to create headlines himself so that if he says it on First Take, then you're going to go listen to him on a Sirius XM radio show to see what he has to say about what he said. Again, Vince Wilfork didn't attend the White House. Brandon Browner, he didn't attend the White House. Darrell Revis, anybody see Darrell Revis? I did not see Darrell Revis. So are those three guys, are they racist too? Or is it just Tom Brady? So what he had to say about Tom Brady is Mr. Impeccable. Tom Brady is the one that cares about his image down to the T. The way he walks, the way he talks, the way he dresses, the way he carries himself. I'm quite sure the owner, Mr. Robert Kraft, had commitments. I'm quite sure Bill Belichick, the de facto GM, as well, had commitments. They showed up. But again, he just accuses Tom Brady of being a racist for not being there. What I'm saying is, you are the president of the United States of America. You respect the office. And if the man requests you, you show up. And if you don't show up, you either be straight up and honest and tell us, you know what, this is why I'm not coming. Or you show up. Tom Brady was straightforward and said that his parents had a 50th anniversary party that he had to attend. And I'll tell you what, if my parents stay together for 50 years, to be honest, I don't know how they stayed together for 40, but if they make it to 50 and I get invited to do something that I've already done three times, I'm probably going to my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And I don't care how big it is. At one time, I thought Wedding Crashers was the biggest movie that had ever come out. I went to it three times with three different broads in the theaters. Three times, three different girls went to it. Somebody asked me to go for a fourth time. I didn't go. I said, hey, I had already seen Wedding Crashers three times. Don't need to see it again. So maybe if this would have been the first time that Tom Brady had won the Super Bowl and his parents had their 50th wedding anniversary, maybe the parents would have said, hey, go to the White House. It's going to be such an honor for you to be there. Go. But he's already been there three times. But again, this is something that Stephen Smith doesn't like. Stephen A. Smith, again, just says whatever he wants to get you to listen to see what he's going to say about what he just said. And all he does is complain. I mean, this guy is never happy. I'm sure that this is what Stephen A. Smith had to say when Barack Obama was elected president. Am I happy that there is a black man in the White House for the first time in the history of this great country? Sure. Would I like to see someone with a skin tone more of like Moses Malone or Karl Malone? Sure. That's all I'm saying. Very happy that there's a black man in the president, as the president of the United States, in the White House. But I don't think I can be totally satisfied until someone with the skin color of a Kenyan marathon runner is finally calling the shots. Or Stephen A. Smith is having a threesome with some broad and his sister. Am I totally and thoroughly and utterly just enjoyed that I am going down on you right now while your sister is licking my asshole? Sure. Sure. But do I wish she would use her tongue in a counterclockwise manner in the way that your mom did last week? That is what I would like. It is utterly ridiculous that right now I'm having a threesome with you and your sister. But I would just prefer it if she would use her tongue in a counterclockwise manner.
The Hot Mess.
All right, final story here in the Hot Mess. I don't know if you guys saw this. Two different major markets. Like, this isn't Boise, Idaho. This isn't Lincoln, Nebraska we're talking about. One city is New York. One city is Chicago. And there were two major gaffes on the local news affiliates there. The first one happened when the Blackhawks took care of business against the Nashville Predators, a team that needed to hand out cards that explained the rules of professional hockey to their fan base. I'll tell you what, when that happens, you do not deserve a professional hockey team in your city. Anyway, the Blackhawks took care of business against the Nashville Predators. And the local ABC affiliate, ABC 7 in Chicago, obviously was pretty excited to report on it. But the headline that was in the caption next to the smoking hottie who was reporting this story, she's a good-looking girl. I'm not going to lie. She's a good-looking girl. The headline read, Blacks Win, instead of Blackhawks. Blacks Win instead of the Blackhawks. Again, I'm pretty sure that that is a very similar headline that ran in the Huntsville Times in 1863 after the Emancipation Proclamation. Blacks Win. So the second case, again, another hockey story. The next day in New York, this is New York's NBC affiliate, NBC4. The New York Islanders played what was eventually going to be their final game at the Nassau Coliseum. So they did a story on what are your favorite memories there. They won four straight championships in the 80s, probably the last professional sports team in America to do that. We'll get Rakish on there. We'll get Rakish to find out whether or not that's the case. But so the Islanders beat the Capitals in game six. And they start interviewing these people and asking them, what was your greatest memory, blah, blah, blah. And the headline at the bottom, the graphic at the bottom of the screen says, Islanders force a game seven. Nassau Coliseum could stay open for game eight. Game eight. And also at the beginning of the entire report on that story was a shit show. The guy at the beginning, first was like stuttering like a kid who had just stuck his dick in a light socket, was stuttering through it, started laughing about it. And then instead of saying extended stay below the picture of the Nassau Coliseum, it actually said extended stat. So again, these are two major networks now. Blacks Win and promoting a possible game eight in a professional sports series, which maybe that's how they do it in cricket. Maybe in billiards, maybe they do like, 11 game series. I don't know. But all I know is that in the Big Five, you're talking hockey, or the Big Four, you're talking hockey, basketball, football, baseball. I don't know if there's ever been anything more than a seven game series. So that's embarrassing on that front. But it's But how does this get past a producer? I mean, that stat, like the game eight stat, stayed up there during the entire report. There should be a technical director in that back room that notices it and says, hey, drop that down. We don't need that. You don't need that over your story if it's wrong. But that stayed up the entire time. So that means the technical director and probably the intern who put that up there, or the person, the graphics coordinator, whatever that position is called, they put that up there. So you have in the biggest city, the biggest market in the country, you have mistakes like this. Like you would think that you would just be able to find someone more qualified in market number one in America. Now, if you're telling me that it's like this weekend, maybe I didn't know about it, and it was bring your retarded cousin Sal, or your retarded, bring an ITT tech graduate to work day, then maybe I get it. Some tard up there, some guy where high school is such a bitch that he had to go to ITT tech. You know, if that's who's working in your sports department, I get it that weekend. But you just have to, and I don't know why these people are even in sports if they don't know that it's the Black Hawks instead of the Blacks. You can't blame that one on autocorrect. That's just sheer stupidity that if someone thinks that a sports team is called the Chicago Blacks. The Negro Leagues have been over for about 50 years, honey. Possibly 60 years. I'm not sure. Not a Negro League enthusiast, but the Chicago Blacks, definitely not a sports team, and someone needs to know better there before that gets on the air. But I would love to be able to know what is going on in these local news markets. Again, this happens in Boise. I get it. You know, not a lot of smart people up there. This happens in Lincoln, Nebraska. I get it. Nobody wants to work in Market 63. You know, you're getting people who probably don't even have a college degree at that point. Hard time to find someone who's going to work for $6 an hour in Lincoln, Nebraska. But I just think it is utterly ridiculous that I've got to sit and watch a news report in New York and it's going to say game eight.
The pile.
Well, this is going to be a little awkward here. I don't know if I can play the narrator, the attorney, and the judge as well here in everybody's favorite segment of athletes and the arrests that go down every single week here in the pile. So I think we'll just bust through it. It's awkward. I miss my pals. I miss Andy Ostroff. I miss Tyshawn Phillips or Tyshawn Prince, whichever one you know him by better. And just can't wait to get him back on the show next week. But here we go. First up here in the pile. Now this poor timing is what Lael Collins, the LSU offensive lineman, expected to be a first round pick in the NFL draft. His attorney says it's poor timing, but he is wanted for questioning in his pregnant ex-girlfriend's murder back down in Louisiana. So a 21-year-old standout at LSU, Lael Collins, he was in Chicago already for Thursday night's draft. He was one of 27 hopefuls that was going to attend the draft. But back in Baton Rouge, his pregnant former girlfriend was shot dead in her home. So you would love to think that hopefully this is not a Ray Caruth situation, that the guy was like, hey, I'm going to come into millions of dollars and that bitch isn't getting a dime. You just hope that this is not the situation, and cops aren't sure that isn't the case. So, which we think is great advice here, Lael Collins, instead of walking across the stage at tomorrow night's draft, if a team would even take him in the first round. I mean, this is a red flag right here. I mean, it doesn't get any redder than this. This is blood red. You know, you shit your pants in church and you make a super loud fart noise so everyone comes over and looks at you while you're doing it. It does, as red as your face gets there, it doesn't get any redder than that. Red flag right here. Lael Collins, former girlfriend who is pregnant with a child who may or may not be his. May or may not be his. Thankfully, the child survived the ordeal. But Lael Collins might be in some deep shit. Now, his attorney says it's poor timing. And for the sake of everyone involved, it's not going to bring his ex-girlfriend back to life. We get that. But you just hope you hope the man is innocent. Mentioned as a possibility to be taken by the Giants, who pick at number 9 and wanted to bulk up their offensive line. I'm going to be honest. If I'm a GM, I'm not taking him. I know he's not. He's technically, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty. But I'll tell you what, boy, would you eat shit years down the road if it came out like that he was actually involved. We're not saying he was involved. Maybe poor timing is the best way to describe this one. Poor timing.
The Pile.
This is a great story out of Iowa City, Iowa, which is obviously where Iowa City is. You don't see a lot of Iowa City, Japans. So a great story out of Iowa City, Iowa, where Scottie Pippen's daughter, who actually looks like a smoking little hottie. She sure as shit didn't get her facial features from her old man, I'll tell you that. That was one ugly motherfucker, Scottie Pippen. Quite possibly, if Sam Cassell would have gotten hurt and never played in the NBA, Scottie Pippen may have been or would have been the ugliest player to ever suit up for an NBA team. Ugly fucking guy right there, Scottie Pippen. Anyway, Scottie Pippen's smoke show of a daughter arrested for walking into the Sheraton Inn, Sheraton Hotel. I believe it's, the Sheraton is not an inn. No. You never really hear of any good hotels within, like even the Hilton Garden Inn. You walk in and you're like, this isn't a Hilton. Never is inn at the good of a, at the end of a good hotel. Anyway, so she walks into this Sheraton Hotel and just starts taking a piss on the hotel lobby floor. And that's it. Gets done. Walks back outside. And then just fucking hangs out there. So the hotel lobby personnel, they call the cops. And they say, yeah, Scottie Pippen's daughter just took a piss on our floor. So they come out. The cops come out. And they find her hanging out outside the hotel. Now the personnel, the hotel personnel, they already knew who she was. The cops already knew who she was. Because 16 days ago, she was arrested at the same hotel for public intoxication and for fighting the security. So they already knew who she was. So apparently Scottie Pippen's daughter in the Sheraton Hotel, I mean, it's kind of like Cedric Benson in Austin, Texas. You got to stay the fuck away from there, man. I'm sure in Iowa City, there's at least 24 hotels. You want to hang out? The Sheraton's not for you, Scottie Pippen's daughter, Sierra. So the cops show up. They find Sierra Pippen standing outside the hotel. She reeks of booze. She also exhibited various signs of intoxication, including impaired speech and balance. And despite the fact that she was underage, police noted that Pippen was wearing wristbands for two different bars. No big deal. She's 20. It's not like she's 12 and she's going into bars. She's 20. I'm sure she has a great fake. Or I'm sure that there's some dude who wants to bag Scottie Pippen's daughter and says, fuck yeah, you can come in the Chumleys. So they ask her to take field sobriety tests. She declined. Pippen also refused to take a post-arrest breathalyzer. And then she accuses the officer of being racist. Because that's what you do in 2015. So that's it. Sierra Pippen, arrested for taking a piss. You know, honey, you can't do that. You can't do that, honey, even in Iowa. Even in a hotel in Iowa. I'm sure maybe there are some parts once you get outside of Iowa City or Des Moines. Maybe, you know, northwestern Iowa. You know, you might get a free room for walking into the hotel lobby and taking a piss. But not at the Sheraton Hotel, honey. That is a fine, fine establishment. But doesn't it make you wonder? Like, she's Scottie Pippen's daughter. You have to think she would have gotten away with it if she was Jordan's kid.
The Pile.
Did you guys see what happened to this dude, Brittany Griner? So Brittany Griner plays in the WNBA despite the fact that she's a dude. She is engaged to Tulsa Shock forward Glory Johnson, who does, she looks more like a girl than Brittany Griner does, but she's got some manly characteristics as well. So Brittany Griner and Glory Johnson were both arrested Wednesday, April 22nd in Goodyear, Arizona, following a fight at their residence. Griner and Johnson, both 24, are scheduled to be married in May 2015 after they were engaged in August of last year. So there's an update here. Brittany Griner pleads guilty and she enters a diversion program. Apparently, Griner pleaded guilty to a charge of disorderly conduct as part of a plea deal and will enter a diversion program. All charges will be dismissed if Griner completes 26 weeks of domestic violence counseling. You have to think you knew this was coming. Maybe people forget because she was only a freshman at this point, but do you remember, I can't remember what team it was against, maybe Oklahoma? But Brittany Griner flat out thug punched a girl on the other team when she was a freshman. And I think she only ended up getting like a 2-game suspension because of it. But it's in her blood. It's in her blood. You knew sooner or later it was going to do it. So this is her first. She was suspended back in college, but this is her first. And no word if they're still going to go on and get married, but this is just like, and it's so crazy that, you know, this is just like Ray Rice and Janae. He smacks her in the elevator. They still go on and get married. It's a fight bad enough at their residence that the cops are called. She has to, as part of a plea deal, she pleads guilty to disorderly conduct. You got to wonder what the charges were before that. Are these two still going to get married? I'm pretty sure my wife, if I would have beat the piss out of her or even gotten in a fight like bad enough to where the cops were called, probably would have called off the wedding at that point. Probably would have called it off, but maybe, who knows? Athletes are different. Maybe this dude, Brittany Griner, is different.
The Pile.
You guys remember John Jones, the UFC heavyweight champion of the world? Yeah, he's not the UFC champion anymore. He's been stripped of that title and suspended indefinitely by the by UFC because Albuquerque police released their report on a 3-car crash that included fighter John Jones. And according to witnesses, Jones acted like a man who really didn't want to stick around. So bad that after he hit this woman in a Honda crossing through the intersection of Southern Avenue Southeast and Juan Tabo Boulevard. You guys know where that is in Albuquerque, right? When Jones hit the Honda on the driver's side, the impact pushed the Honda into a Toyota waiting at the red light, and that driver told a similar account of what happened. Witnesses and drivers from both cars said Jones got out of his car and ran away onto a hill, but he soon returned. What did he return for? You guessed it, a handful of cash. Witnesses stated he slouched over and ran back to the vehicle, grabbing a large handful of cash. Witnesses stated he shoved the cash into his pants and ran north, jumping the fence into Terracita. Officers were sent to attempt to locate the driver of the vehicle. The officers who attempted to look for him were unsuccessful. So then the cops go back to the car and they find a marijuana pipe with marijuana inside, as well as MMA paperwork from Nevada identifying him as John Jones. The paperwork had Jones's phone number on it, and an officer tried calling Jones several times, according to the report. The officer left a message asking Jones to call dispatch, but Jones did not call back. So if you're wondering what it takes to get stripped of your UFC title and then suspended from UFC indefinitely, that's what it takes. Getting suspended from USC indefinitely, it takes a hell of a lot more than that.
The Pile.
Finally here in The Pile, every year at the NFL draft, somebody does something stupid. And this year we already talked about Lael Collins. Hopefully he didn't do anything there. But this is just dipshit city, baby, right here. Former Missouri defensive end Shane Ray, 3 days before he's expected to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft, Shane Ray was cited Monday morning on suspicion of marijuana possession during a search of his car on Interstate 70. Ray, 21, was pulled over for speeding in his Chrysler 300 at 5:46 a.m. in Cooper County while driving alone westbound on I-70. The officer detected the odor of marijuana and while searching Ray's car found a small amount of weed in a compartment. Ray was cited for possession of up to 35 grams of marijuana, which is a Class A misdemeanor and punishable by up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. He also was cited for failing to drive in the right lane of a highway with two or more lanes. That's a Class C misdemeanor. Ray was also issued a warning for speeding. The good news for Ray is that he did not appear to be impaired and was cooperative with the officer. He was released on signature summons, and he faces a June 30th court date in Cooper County. Now, Ray already came out and he apologized to his mother, fans, and prospective NFL teams for his poor judgment. And he said he's embarrassed and he realizes there are consequences for his actions. He was not under the influence nor impaired. Therefore, he was not detained. Fortunately, Monday's incident only resulted in a citation. He vows to make better choices in the future. It is imperative that I continue to strive to better myself. My future NFL career has been something I have always dreamed about and is very important to me. I'm going to stop him right there. If it was really that important to him. Look, I love weed. I love weed just as much as the next guy, especially when it's jammed into a little chocolate chip cookie. It doesn't get any better than that. If you've never had weed in the form of a small chocolate chip cookie, you have no idea what you're missing. Better than sex, sometimes. A weed cookie, chocolate chips, maybe a little bit of peanut butter. It's amazing. Love weed. But if you would tell me that, I'll tell you what, you don't eat those cookies for the next 3 months, the next 6 months, the next year. Because as long as you don't do that, you're going to get a $20 or $30 million contract from an NFL team. Half of which is probably going to be guaranteed. $15 million. So think about that. It's the whole Josh Hamilton argument. Josh Hamilton, 5 years, $125 million. All you have to do during those 5 years is not drink beer, not drink booze, not do coke, not do anything. No drugs, no booze for 5 years. Can you do it? For $125 million, you bet your fucking ass I could do it. For $15 million. Fuck, you give me $1 million and you tell me you can't have sex with your wife for a year. Can't have a Miller Lite for a year. I'll give you $1 million. Sign me up. My wife will still be there at the end of the year. She might have to finger bang her way to 2016, but I'll tell you what, she's going to be there waiting for me. And when she does, we're going to plow our way through that year. And I'm going to have $1 million to spend on her ass. She's going to love me for it. This guy right here, 3 days away from being a first-round pick, and he can't lay off the weed. And he's out at 5:46 in the morning driving on a highway with marijuana in his car. It's a Monday morning, 5:46. He's not going to work. He's not working first shift down at the mechanic's office. His office, mechanic's garage. He's not working first shift at Hardee's. He's not working first shift at the Waffle House in the kitchen. Not working first shift on the assembly line, 5:46. He's out after a night of fucking getting real with his boys. What are you doing? 3-4 days before the NFL draft, before the biggest day, it's going to change your life. It's going to put you up into that percentile that people around you have only dreamed that they could get into. And you're out doing this shit. Again, if I'm a GM, it's poor decision making. Is he 21 years old? Fuck yeah. I was 21. I once put my leg through a fucking car window just because my buddy smashed a car window. I said, well, it's my turn to do it. I'm going to do it. I was stupid too. But I wasn't Shane Ray. I didn't have a $30 million contract dangling in front of me. I was just an idiot. Still am. Just a nobody. Tommy Gimmer, Shane Ray, all he had to do was wait 3 days. Wait until you sign the contract, man. It's not going to be frowned upon once you sign the contract and you're in the NFL. People smoke weed all the time. There are people who are smoking weed while they're signing their contracts, probably. But 3 or 4 days ahead of time? Stupid. Shane Ray. I'm sure if Olbermann on ESPN or ESPN2 was doing his worst, and even worst or worst person, whatever the fuck he does, Shane Ray would be in there. It's just stupid. Ignorant. Unbelievable. That's all the time we have here today on the Daily Upper Decker. Make sure you check us out on the dailyupperdecker.com or dailyupperdecker.com. Either one works, baby. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter at Daily Upper Deck. And of course, we have a Vine now as well. Once again, my name is Tommy Gimler. I've had a hell of a time here coming to you live from my hotel room here at the Essex Inn in Chicago, just 4 blocks away from NFL Draft Town. Make sure you follow us tomorrow night, Thursday night, on the Daily Upper Decker. That's dailyupperdecker.com. As we live blog the NFL draft and point out every single mistake that Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay make throughout the evening. Once again, that's on the Daily Upper Decker. Nothing but sports and crap.
The Daily Upper Decker. Nothing but sports and crap.